Welcome to Smart Amazing Conversations with Dr. Nancy, a podcast that takes a look at stories of life and leadership for smart, amazing women and men like you.
The way I can give support to the world right now is by showing up. The most important thing is don't think just that you have to bring anything. Bring yourself. Show up.
If you are in a position of leadership and a position of management, bring women along with you.
Supporting women is Dr. Nancy's passion and her purpose, and talking with other women and men who promote women's leadership is one of her favorite things to do.
I've yet to meet a woman who did not know what she really wanted. She was just either afraid to ask the questions or she was afraid of what the answers meant.
Their stories connect us and help us understand that the possibilities are endless if we support each other and lift other women up.
Trust is created by persistent identity. I show up in my conversations. I build relationship. I show up as myself time and time and time again.
Yeah.
And trust is built. It's one conversation at a time.
Jasmine Minhas is a Sikh American activist and organizer based in Delaware. She earned her Bachelor of Arts in French, History, and Political Science from Bucknell University in 2022. During her undergraduate career, she worked tirelessly to spearhead multiple initiatives and campaigns centered on creating a more equitable, inclusive, and just campus community. Following graduation, Jasmine worked at the ACLU of Delaware, where they successfully led and organized grassroots efforts related to police accountability. Jasmine has worked on gun violence prevention advocacy since 2018 as an organizer with March for Our Lives and as a board member of the Delaware Coalition Against Gun Violence. As a culminating moment of years-long advocacy, she was able to witness Delaware Governor Carney sign a package of historic gun safety legislation into law in June of 2022. Now here's Dr. Nancy and her guest, Jasmine Minhas.
Well, you know, you are a little powerhouse. There's no doubt about it. You're the energy bunny plus Wonder Woman. I was reading reading your bio and I went, wow, how'd you get to be you? I mean, that's the most important story today is how did you get to be Jasmine that I'm speaking to today? Because, I mean, you're a powerhouse. I mean, did you come out that way?
I think so. Thank you. I think I have always, and this might sound cheesy, I've always been a people person. Since I was little, I just really found a lot of enjoyment out of being close to people, learning about who they are and what makes them who they are and their quirks and things like that. And I found myself too, like naturally, making friends with people who are older than me, being drawn to people who are also older than me. And I found that oftentimes people would come to me with their issues. And I think as I got older, I realized that those interpersonal issues or things that seem like maybe individuals struggling with their mental health or like body image, things like that, linked to like other bigger issues related to systemic problems that we have in the United States. And so I think once I realized that tie, I became more and more interested in like how to solve those ailments for people. That's one aspect of it, just my personality, but I think also it has a lot to do with how I was raised. So I was born and raised in Delaware, but my parents are from Punjab, India. They immigrated to the United States in 1998 is when they came. I grew up as a Sikh. So in Sikhism, one of our key principles is seva, which means selfless service. And also just the principle of standing up against injustice. So we're really called to stand up for those who can't stand up for themselves. And that really impacted me as a kid. So I think that with my already natural inclination towards people coupled together, I think led me to be really passionate about community service work and looking for opportunities where I can be with people and help people.
Yeah. So what you're telling me is that with this was part of your background, your family, your culture was to be a Sikh, to be an activist, to care for others. You know, I mean, I too came from a very philanthropic, a very caring family. My family started several churches and it was a responsibility, you know, and I think that's, you grow up with that responsibility to take care of those who can't care for themselves. So you started early and you came from a background like that. So yeah, I get that. I understand that. You know, I came 2 months early, so I was a preemie.
Oh,
and
wow.
I think I thinking, okay, let's get this done.
Let's get going. Yeah.
We got to start moving, shaking and shaking and shaking and shaking. But you know, inclusion, diversity, and equity and gender equality is so, so important. But it goes so much further, you know, because again, there are so many injustices. I mean, you know, and I guess I guess for me, and I'm sure for you, you have to finally decide what's most important. We can't save the world. We can't save all the world. We can save some of the world. We can save some of the people. But all in all, you know, the ERA coalition and the ERA amendment, we have to find ways to do the job. So your parents really taught you this from a very early age. And again, I really appreciate that because I wish more people understood service, you know, selfless service. And everybody can do something, whether it's big or small. But what was your first as an activist and as that selfless service, where did your energies go first?
I think first was feeding the homeless in downtown Wilmington. I grew up being a big participating in the interfaith community in Delaware. And so every fourth Saturday of the month, we would all get together in downtown Wilmington and we would feed the homeless and we'd also bring clothing for them as well and toys for the kids. And I think that's when I first plugged in and started. I think I was always really eager to start, but there was a lot of opportunities that I felt like you had to be like 16 or like your parent has to be there with you for the entire time. And so I was always like looking for ways that I could get involved. And age actually was a big hindrance for a while.
How old were you at that point? You said, wait a minute, I've got to get older to do
more. Yeah, I think I was like 12 or 13. Like I had finagled my way into like being able to do that. But I think other service opportunities were like working at a shelter and things like that. You got to be older.
You know, your education is interesting. Your education, you have a bachelor's of art in French history and political science from Bucknell University. And then, I could almost see you as a social worker, as someone who's truly in the mental health profession. But is that something that's in the back of your mind, or where are you with that, with your education?
Yeah, so I'm planning to go to law school, and ultimately I want to become a civil rights attorney. And then after that, eventually run for office myself. So that's my plan. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, you're getting involved with the right organizations. The ERA coalition is quite a group. Okay. Well, let's talk about some things that are very, very important because again, the youth component to what's going on is so very important. I can't applaud you more. You know, the ERA coalition, to see the youth component was to me the most valuable component. It's the next generation. It's a generation that's going to take over and really change the world for good. But again, you have to know how to do it. So you talk about authenticity, and this is something that's becoming more and more valuable than ever for us to learn about being authentic. I think that's more important now than ever, is that people truly understand what it is to be themselves, to walk in a room and truly be themselves without all the, you know, they say the ego is not your amigo. So, I mean, the ego blown out of proportion and walking in and saying, how do I impress these people? What do I do? But being authentic is truly a very valuable characteristic. So for you, what does that mean?
I think entering a space and getting rid of any preconceived notion of how I need to appear to everyone there, I think, It's been a very interesting journey. I think sometimes I still struggle with this, definitely with like imposter syndrome. I think growing up also in predominantly white spaces and like in spaces that really promote a cookie cutter of what it means to be excelling, what it means to be a leader, and a lot of perfectionism tendencies. I think I found, especially in college, really my stride where I just accepted that I'm going to show up as myself and I'm going to show up as human and I'm going to run my meeting that way. And like, I'm going to be quirky. And that's just how I am. I think just reminding myself and grounding that like, I am enough the way that I am. And I come with my expertise and my ideas. And I belong in that space too. I think sometimes when you're not used to seeing people who look like you, who share the same beliefs as you, you can kind of get in your own head when you walk into that space. But I think a lot of just empowering myself and reminding myself that like, I'm qualified to be there and I belong there. And also showing that we don't need to always be our perfect selves. Like we're human beings. So like showing our humanity is important. I think the more authentic we are with ourselves and allowing ourselves to show up that way, we model that other people can do the same. And I found that to be really rewarding and building relationships with people.
Yeah. Delaware is a more of an East Coast kind of mentality, I would think. you know, I don't know if your town is big or small. Again, that would be an interesting place to grow up. But again, your family coming from India and some of the values that you all have. So what have been some of the challenges for you? Again, a woman of color, being in an environment such as the Delaware region, what are some of the challenges that you have met that, of course, that you can help others with as well?
Yeah, I think some of the challenges definitely early on, there's a pretty small like Punjabi and like Sikh population in Delaware. So I think one of the biggest hurdles for me growing up and something I'm still working on is like educating people on like my identity and what Sikhism is. And I have a younger brother who's 2 years younger than me, and he wears a turban. And growing up, he used to get picked on a lot because people would misgender him and just didn't have an idea of like our identity and like why he wore a turban and the significance of that. So I think that's also a lot of where my advocacy came from too, like growing up, like in middle school, giving presentations to the student body, things like that throughout high school. In high school, I passed a joint resolution in Delaware that declared every April as Sikh Awareness and Appreciation Month. So things like that, I think it's really interesting when you have to be like constantly educating people about like who you are on like so many levels. And so I think that's definitely a struggle of like creating that awareness. I think feeling invisible in that way, not having your holidays well known, people don't really know who you are, what you celebrate, what your values are. I'm used to being like the only person representing my background in the majority of the spaces. I mean, besides when I leave the house, besides my family, there's not really anyone else in most of the spaces that I'm in that looks like me or like has the same background. So I think just finding where you belong has always been challenging for me. And I think also being Indian and like also like Asian American, I think it's really difficult at times. I struggle with knowing, like, even when we talk about diversity and equity work, where I fell in that, because I felt like a lot of focus, and rightfully so, I think this is not a problem. I think there should be more attention to this as well about like what the Black experience is like. But I think there's other populations within school environments that get forgotten and there aren't resources given to that. So I think the hardest part for me was going to like a predominantly white private school from middle school throughout high school and trying to find my place in there.
But did you find your place?
I think you did, becoming
an activist and being a voice. But you know what? I think when we talk about inclusion, we talk about diversity, and especially being a young person of color, such as yourself, I think it really allows people to really start to think about themselves. But you know what? We all have our insecurities. You know, when we walk in a room, and I think even a teenager of any age or a college student, we're all trying to figure out who we are. But when we hear somebody, I will tell you this. I went to in fact, I want to introduce you to Dr. Sheila Robinson. She is the founder of Diversity Women's Business Magazine. But I went to their conference, and 70% of the attendees were of color. And so, again, I think it was an interesting time to really understand that when we came together in such a diverse population, that diversity and inclusion became so much more clear to me that it was probably one of the most valuable lessons I have ever had in my entire life. That when you understand that and you get past that and you begin to understand that we're more alike, we are more alike than we're different. This is the value that comes when you truly bring diverse populations together, like the ERA coalition. You know, when we were in that room, at the meeting, we looked around the room, and the diversity was amazing. But the inclusion and the fact that we were all in the same room, knowing what we all wanted to do, which was to get the ERA amendment passed, is that something very valuable happens, and that you can draw more and more people into that experience. You know, you talk about mentorship, and I think this is key. It really truly is, because you know they say either be a coach, get a coach. You know, being a mentor and finding a mentor is so very valuable. So who have been the mentors in your life? Who are the mentors for you even now?
I think the first person that comes to mind is actually a track coach I had in high school. His name's Coach Williams. And I still call him Coach, and we're still very close. He made me feel seen and valuable at a time in my life where like I didn't really feel that way in that environment. And I think to give more background on the school that I went to, it was very high performing. Our school motto was many things done well. So there's a lot of pressure on just being good at everything, at like athletics, arts, things like that. And so
performing
everything. Yeah. And so I was never like the fastest kid, right, on the track team. Like I would always give my all, but I was definitely not the fastest. And before he had come on as coach, if you weren't naturally gifted or like one of the fast kids, you kind of got forgotten. You weren't paid much mind. Like you were there, but like no one really gave you time of day. And his style of coaching, which is so different, like he would come to practice and he just wanted to know each kid. Like he would build a relationship with each student based on who they are outside of track. Like, what are their hobbies? What do they like? And I think he really nurtured in me my tendency to like look out for people. And And my leadership skills, basically, and like made me feel like I was an important part of the team. Like what I brought to the team was important, even though it wasn't maybe the traditional sense of maybe getting a medal for getting first place or things like that. But I still had a valuable part in coaching others and mentoring others on the team. And so he's still someone who like basically was my rock then and continues to be in terms of a support system.
Fantastic. Yeah. You know what? I was growing up, I see the faces of the people supported me. I had moved from Tennessee when I was in the sixth grade to Washington, D.C. area. And the schools in Washington, D.C. were much more advanced than the schools in Tennessee. And so I was behind the first day I walked into the school. It embarrassed me. I was embarrassed. I felt like I was stupid, that I didn't belong. And then this teacher came along and she realized my struggle. And I see her face today, that she took me under her wing. And she knew that I was struggling and that I came from a place, and she helped me to catch up. And these are the people that are the most valuable people in our life. But I also, by the way, Jasmine, I see the faces of the people who did not support me as well. And I think that's the toughest part of all, is that when you run into people who are biased, who are racist, and they don't get it, and they just really, they feel better about themselves when they put themselves down. So those are the people that just have to go around. We just have to go around. So you were blessed to have a mentor early in your life. And so who do you mentor? Who do you mentor now? Because again, because of your experiences, because mentoring is a two-way process. What you give out, you get, well, I found it, whatever I put out, I get back threefold. It comes back to me threefold.
I think it's really interesting. I think I don't even consider it to be like mentorship, more for like peer-to-peer like relationships, honestly, because I think that, like you said, like we're learning from each other. I think through my role with March for Our Lives, still now I've like have progressed through multiple different iterations through the organization, but now I help to onboard new chapters and like new chapter leads, people who like oftentimes this is their first touch point into organizing if they've never like done this before. And so I think learning about who they are, where they come from, what strategy is going to be work best for their town, their city, and learning why they even were drawn to doing this work in the first place. I think that's one. I think another too, I think has been a more informal circle of like activists and individuals and friends that I've made along the years of my work. And we've created this kind of circle of informally of just trying to sustain each other through like relationship and just talking to each other about the things that we are struggling with, what we're seeing in our organizing spaces, and like just trying to support one another. I think that's really important too. There's a lot of like the culture of like we need to grind, and I think that there's just not enough time where we like are restoring. And I think especially when we do this activism work, I love it, but it takes so much out of us. And so I sometimes have to stop and be like, how am I refilling my own cup? And so I think I found that building support networks like that have been really helpful for me.
Absolutely. You know, I was just talking to the ERA Coalition. We had a meeting a couple of days ago. And, you know, we were talking about asking for funding. And I said, you know, what you need to be doing first is developing relationships. And once you start developing relationships and you start lending support, that two-way process of giving support, asking for support, then you can ask for things. But I think what sometimes happens, especially in our society, is that we don't spend the time developing those important support systems and those relationships, which will take you into the years ahead, like your coach, your track coach. I mean, but this is what I think is so important for organizations to understand, to not only partner, but to support each other and bring their forces together and the value. And again, as you said, it is sometimes a tireless exhausting mission that we all have. You know, I'm an activist. I mean, I've been an advocate and advocate all my life. And, you know, some days there's been that day with Women Connect for Good that I'm, you know, I was beating on my drum and I thought, nobody's listening. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm out there beating on my drum and just nobody's listening. But then all of a sudden, you know, you'll get a call, somebody lifts you up. And that's what this is about, is making sure the authenticity is there, but the mentoring and the coaching and the support is there. And then it's so much more valuable and so much more satisfying when you're doing it with people who truly are like-minded and really want to help each other. So,
because you feel like you're in community.
Yeah. But that's what we're doing. I think, again, this is the community that we're building. The youth component, but the people who really understand that this is not a one-time thing. This is what we want to be as a country, is that we're all in this together and that we're helping each other to get there, and that no one's any better than anybody else. You know, we're only as good as the whole. And I think this is something that, you know, the me is gone and we're back to the we, you know, we've got to be the we component, because we're not going to get there until we all come together. There's an old African statement. I mean, it said, if you want to go fast, go alone. But if you want to go far, go all together. So that's what we're doing right now with this the ERA coalition and the things that we're working together, and people such as yourself and the groups that you're organizing. We've got to get there together. But if we all go together, we're going to get there. And maybe not as fast as we'd like to, but we'll get there all together and we'll be able to do a lot more. So what are you organizing right now? I know I listened to you in Washington, D.C., but what are you doing right now?
Right now, I am working on two political campaigns. So I'm the volunteer coordinator for gubernatorial race in Delaware. The candidate is Matt Meyer. He is the Newcastle County exec right now. And then the second campaign that I'm working for is Brandon Fletcher Dominguez's campaign for State House for District 3, which is in Wilmington, and I'm his campaign coordinator. So it's been really interesting. My days are really packed, scheduling fundraisers, scheduling candidates, everything, creating finance plans, doing one-on-ones with team members, staffing events, running meetings with consultants. I mean, I'm kind of everywhere and anywhere. And I think it's just been such a great experience thus far to just meet so many different Delawareans, where they're at and hear what their like issues are. I think it's built upon what I was already seeing at the ACLU when I was there as a paralegal, of what our key issues are in Delaware. And I think it's also just been like really interesting because I want to run. And I think the best way to like learn is just to be on the back end and see how these things are done. So yeah, it's been really, really interesting and exciting time.
Politics can be a very sticky process. So what are the pros and cons of being in a political, helping with a political race? Because I think sometimes you find out things that you just really sometimes are disappointing about people.
Yeah, I think there's definitely like a cookie cutter mentality within Delaware politics. It's a phrase called the Delaware way, where you kind of get by and you get things done by being polite to everyone. Like you don't rock the boat, and there's a way that's always things have been done. So we don't want to rock the boat and keep that. I think that is really frustrating. I think that it's interesting to see how priorities are different between each campaign based upon like how big the campaign is. And I think also just seeing like, how much money makes or breaks things. I think, yeah, that for me, I think was really hard, tough thing to swallow when I first started. I think everyone logically thinks like, well, yeah, obviously you need to fundraise and you need to raise money. But I think that like, there are so many people who don't have money they can give to a campaign, but they should still matter. They should still matter in terms of the constituency. They should still matter in terms of like what their issues are and being heard. And I think I really want to like see more so that like we care for each and every person because they are human and not for any prerequisites. Like I think we should be advocating for like basic things, like people should not be homeless and like they should have enough to eat and they shouldn't have to worry about how they're going to feed their families or things like that. And I think that like sometimes we stray so far away from that at times when we get into this mindset of like, well, to run a campaign, we need to make like X, Y, and Z amount of money. I think that really gets to me. But Yeah. And I think that just seeing like who controls the power a lot of times, and a lot of that is attached to like who has the money. I wish that people were more willing in general to kind of break the Delaware way and speak out about things and not be so hush hush about the things that need to be changed. I don't know, I would say that's my biggest con. I think the pros have just been, again, like being able to meet so many people across Delaware. And I think building relationships with folks and organizations and learning that there's so many people who are on the ground assessing these like and addressing these big needs that Delawareans have. So I think that and gives me hope that there are folks who are like breaking and trying not to just do what is modeled.
Finding out that people really do care, that people really want to make a difference. And, you know, and unfortunately, there's so many people that don't seem to understand that they can make a difference. You know, some people say, well, I don't have a choice. Everybody always has a choice. There's always different ways that people can help. What women have to understand is money is a vehicle. Educating people about that right now. And right now, women in our country have wealth. The women that have wealth can make a difference for girls and women. And we have to make sure that continues to happen, that funding goes to women and children, women and girls programs, to make sure that that continues to be where we have more women such as yourself sitting at the table of decision-making and making a difference in this world. So I'm excited about what you're doing. And I can see you running for office. I see you as a civil rights attorney. I see you working with the ACLU. I have no doubt in my mind that Jasmine, you'll be doing all those things. So, you know, you mentioned the word belong. I think you belong everywhere. My guess is that wherever you go, that you find a way to belong. And I have no doubt about it that you will do more great things in this world. So how would you like to end this conversation with words of wisdom of yours? What would you like to say, and where people can reach you to become an activist also and a Sikh?
Actually, I wanted to share this. There is an author, her name's Cole Arthur Riley, and she is releasing this book called Black Liturgies. But her work has really been keeping me going these past couple months. And I just kind of wanted to end off on this like affirmation that she does at the end of each post. It's a different based on the day. But so we're going to take, I mean, I want you to do it with me. Take an inhale. We refuse to shrink. And then exhale. Together we make room. So I think that's what I want to leave everyone with, is just how can we just continue to show up for each other and to show up authentically and to stay grounded in what matters. I think sometimes we get caught up in maybe the fastest way to get a win, or maybe the most convenient way, or maybe the only way that's been shown. I think sometimes it's important to be reminded of why we do this work in the first place. And it's to stand up for each other, to be there for each other. And I think just keep reaffirming our own humanity and others is really important. So I think the best way to do that is by modeling that for ourselves so that we can do it for others. So I think that's something I keep trying to remind myself. And then in terms of where people can find me, they can email me at jkm030@bucknell.edu. And I also use Instagram, so they can find me at Jasmine K. Minhas on Instagram.
This podcast will emulate much of who you are. And then, of course, we will continue to support you. You know, if you've got something going on, you know, let us know. Because, again, what I'm really excited about is not only Women Connect for Good being more global, have a global presence, but also to have that youth component as well. You know, I have three daughters, you know, so I'm wanting to leave a huge legacy for them as well. So, you know, I want to thank you for what you're doing. And, you know, your energy is fantastic. You keep that energy and you keep that bright light and you keep moving us forward and moving that dial. So congratulations on all you're doing. And I look forward to hearing more and more about what you do. So we'll let you know where this podcast shows, when it shows up, so that you can broadcast it however you want to. But good luck with those two campaigns also.
Thank you so much, Dr. Nancy. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Well, we'll be talking again. We know that we'll be at some meeting somewhere along the line. So
for sure.
You have a great day and keep up the good stuff. Okay.
You too. Thank you.
If you enjoy these smart, amazing conversations, please subscribe, rate, and review them on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. And read and enjoy more amazing stories in my books, In This Together, how successful women support each other in work and life, and leading women. 20 influential women share their secrets to leadership, business, and life. Thank you for listening.